Thanks for listening to Shift Your Spirits. I'm Slade Robertson. For 12 years, I've been a professional intuitive and personal development blogger. I try to talk about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Sunday, December 9th, 2018, as I record this introduction. This week, I'm sharing a conversation with author and writing coach Dallas Woodburn. If you've had a book burning inside you for a while now, this episode is for you. Dallas and I are talking about the tiny shifts in perception that will help you stop procrastinating, stop making excuses, and finally write your book. Or pursue another creative project you have. Of course, I identify as a writer specifically, but no matter what kind of creative you are, you know how much your spiritual identity is connected to your artistry. You also know how it feels when you're not engaging your creativity. You need creative goals. It's all about breaking up big dreams into smaller steps that you can take today. Dallas and I both share a ton of practical tips for actually making your book happen. And more than anything, I hope our conversation will motivate and inspire you. That's coming up in just a few minutes. As always, there's an Oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. We now have over 600 people in the Shift Your Spirits community on Facebook. It is really humbling to see what an active group this is. I belong to a lot of Facebook groups with thousands of people where nobody is talking about anything. It's just kind of the administrator posting something every now and then, no real dialogue or interaction going on. And I'm proud to say our group is nothing like that. The Shift Your Spirits community is the exact ideal opposite. Now, I can't take a lot of credit for how cool the group is. Our group has people writing original topical posts every week, teaching subjects like energy healing, dream analysis, tarot, shamanism, crystals, magic, and spirituality in business. This content is awesome. It's richer and more thorough than a lot of courses or workshops you might pay for. Not to mention, there's all of you guys in there sharing your personal stories, giving advice and support to each other, and sharing funny memes, because we do like a little irreverent humor in our New Age blather. So if you're not interested in Facebook generally, this group is a good enough reason to have an account. There's so much activity in our group. All of my notifications come from your conversations, and that's pretty much all I see. I set my browser tab to open in the group, and I don't even see anything else on there anymore but you guys, us. So if you're interested, we'd love to have you. Search Shift Your Spirits Community on Facebook and click join. Before I forget, I have a bunch of new Patreon supporters to thank this week. Jamie Nelson, Amanda Young, Michelle Coelho, Joni Oglesby, Guinevere Buxo, Leah Walker, and Megan Kennedy. Wow, that's a nice list. Thank you. I also want to say thank you to all of you who continue to support on Patreon. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and you want it to continue. It's very encouraging to me. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access a guided meditation called Messages from Your Spirit Guides. And I'm working on some new guided meditation material, by the way. There are some exclusive bonus episodes, and there's also a mastery level of support where you can download one of my courses for free each month. This month, the free course is Automatic Author. It's the system I use to write all my nonfiction. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits.
Well, I have loved to write for as long as I can remember. I think every kid that I have interacted with and that I have known makes up stories, whether it's between their dolls or their action figures or their cars or their make-believe that they are someone else with their friends. And I did that as well. And I think I had a little bit of a almost a jump start or a window into the idea that I could be a writer, because my dad is actually a writer. And so I grew up with this creative energy in the house, and I always loved to read. And I was just very aware that the stories I was making up in my mind and the books that I read, that there was a connection there, and that I could write down these stories as well. And I was also very lucky in that my creative ideas and the stories that I made up were very valued with my family, but also with my teachers. And so I just really discovered early on the magic of tapping into these ideas that I had in my head and not ignoring them, but actually, you know, leaning into them and writing them down on paper, and then even sharing them with other people. And as I grew older, writing became a way for me to connect with my deepest self, my inner self. Through the teenage years, I remember having hard days at school and just coming home and going straight to my journal or my computer, because that was what made me feel safe and what allowed me to process what I was going through. And I still have that feeling, that experience now. When I have tough days, my first impulse isn't to go for a run or to eat something particular. My first impulse is that I need to write about this. So it's always been a part of my identity. And as far as becoming a coach, I think that happened really organically, in a really lovely way, that I was just talking with people about writing, and I had people come to me and say, you know, do you do any teaching? Do you do any coaching? I really want to write, and I don't know where to start. I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, I always say, well, none of us really know what we're doing. A lot of it is this journey that you take on your own, but I would love to be with you on that journey and to take it with you and to be your cheerleader and you know, your accountability partner. And so I began doing coaching just with a few people who I had met in my life in other ways, and then I just realized how much I loved it. And I feel like for me, my coaching practice and my writing practice really go hand in hand. So I love diving into my own creative projects, but I get a little bit lonely if it's just me and inside my head all day. And so then I also love being able to get inside other people's heads and interact with them and talk with them about their projects and be there to help them on their writing journeys.
I can totally relate to that feeling of isolation. I can remember in college, like yourself, I was a creative writing major, and I was so jealous of artists and musicians because I hung out with a lot of musician friends, and it was so collaborative, and there was such a social, you know, force behind the music business industry, you know, as an entertainment form. And it was so immediate, you know, like they could write a song in an afternoon and then perform it, you know, jam with other people. I did play as a musician because I crave that collaboration. And, I totally get that impulse. I think that's one of the reasons why doing this kind of format is so great for me, because it feels like you're here making this with me. And when do authors ever get to like make something live in the moment? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, so these conversations are like our version of like writers jamming, you know what I mean?
I love it.
What were some of the first like big successes for you as a writer? Like, what are some of those milestone moments? Maybe first things you published, or, you know, something that's really memorable.
Yeah, I do a lot of work with kids as well as a teacher and a coach, and I always tell parents that, you know, it's never too early to really make an impact on your child's belief in themselves as a creative being. I remember as a kid, we had this little section in our local newspaper that was called the Kids Corner, where you could submit little poems, and I still vividly remember when one of my poems was published in there. That was probably my first time, you know, seeing my name in print, and I was just so excited. And yeah, I mean, I feel like, Slade, it's been a journey of small milestones that feel significant to me, but that maybe from the outside, you know, someone else wouldn't necessarily think of as such a big deal. Like, for example, there's this literary journal. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's a literary journal called Ziziva that is based here. It's the last word in the dictionary is where they got the name. And I had submitted to this journal for years. I love reading it. I love the stories they publish. And for years, I submitted my short stories to them and got very polite rejection letters in response. And finally, last year, I had a story accepted. And so to me, that just felt like such a big milestone, whereas to the average person walking down the street, they have no idea what Ziziva is. But to me, it just was this huge, just a huge celebration. And I think what I've learned as a writer and as a creative, you know, in my own creative journey is that it's really about, you know, these small milestones for yourself. But for me, even more than the external, it's about the internal leaps that I take. So when I try to write something that feels scary to me or that feels risky or different than what I've written before, you know, to me, that feels like a big success.
Yes.
That I know. Yeah.
I love that. I actually rebel against, like, every time I think I'm going to, like, behave and, like, write something in a series or something, you know, one of those things that they tell you to do, you know, that you're supposed to do, quote unquote, my everything about me will rebel and want to write something really weird or, you know, like totally off the wall. And I've actually started this year, I have a lot of issues because with being in writing and publishing for 15 years now, you know, as a proud indie, I consume a lot of information about the industry and about marketing and about what everyone else is doing. And it can really get in your head, you know, like it can be the worst block of all. And I've been trying to clear out and really get back to whoever that person was that was, you know, 17 years old and planning on majoring, you know, in writing, whoever that person was that was, you know, in those creative writing programs in college, that I really wasn't thinking about anything except my artistry. You know, like I wasn't concerned about what anyone else was doing or whether or not something would sell or how it would be marketed. I didn't care. And I so crave a return to that sort of authentic creative impulse. I'm wondering, what are some of the things that sort of maybe trip you up as a writer or that you get in your head about?
I so agree with what you say about, it seems almost like there's two different sides of my brain or two different hats I wear, with the one side that is just only thinking of the creative project, and then the other side that has maybe these little voices that are stuck in the comparison trap, like you say, or thinking about, well, how will this be marketable and who's going to read this and what are the readers going to think? And so that is definitely something that I relate to, and I have to work to get those voices out. I've learned I love to do a little bit of meditation before I start writing. I tend to write in the morning is my favorite time, and just doing a little bit of some quiet time meditation before I jump in is really helpful. And also the practice of not checking my email before I start writing and not checking any of those social media platforms. I think also writing in the morning for me, it's like I wake up from my dream state and then I'm able to go and start writing. And if I'm able to avoid those temptations of checking in with the outside world first, it helps me to really get into the authentic creativity, like you mentioned. And I think also a lot of my clients that I work with have fears about just whether they will be able to finish the project they're working on. It feels hard. It feels scary. And I feel that too with every new project I undertake, especially when I get, I call the muddy middle of a project. I think there's something where it's, I imagine being in this vast body of water and it's like you're far enough, you've set out far enough from the shore where you started, but then you can't quite see the shore where you're headed. And it just feels, it can feel really scary. And I've noticed with people that I work with, that's where most of the impulse comes, where they want to just give up, where they want to just stop, or they want to start something new because some new idea seems shiny and bright and glossy, and they want to just leap over to that. And I definitely feel that myself, and I have to remind myself to push through and that it's okay if this first draft isn't perfect, that I just want to get the words down on paper. And I always tell myself, you know, words on paper is always better. I can go back and fix them than a blank page, than not having those words down.
Yeah, I live on that place of dead seas with no wind. my sail is hanging. There's no land in sight. It feels to me like it's a 75%, 80% a place where that happens to me. And of course, you know, the most exciting project is the book you're about to write, Once you start working on it, you're like, oh, and this isn't anything as amazing as what I had in mind. And I always want people to know, though, that I don't even show material to, say, a beta reader or someone like that until probably five passes. So I draft a lot, and I think that comes from it's kind of old school the way creative writing is taught, like in MFA programs and stuff, that we, you know, hone and polish things. But I don't worry about the music and the beauty of it so much as I just worry, like you said, about putting the words down on paper. And I, because of my schedule, there's a bunch of reasons I won't go into that make it really hard for me to write like fiction in the morning. And the time that I have carved out for my fiction is tea in the afternoon, and I go to this really great tea shop and apothecary, and I write there every afternoon religiously, you know. And if it means that all I do is like sit and stare at the book that I'm working on, I'm there staring at it, you know, because it really is not about feeling inspired all the time. I mean, if we waited to feel like a brainstorm every time we worked on a book, like, we'd never finish it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so fun to plan a book and, you know, and there are fun moments, but most of it is really this kind of, I hate to say it, guys, but it's like this grueling kind of discipline. And it's not a difficult discipline. It's actually a kind of quiet acceptance that, you know what, you can sit here for an hour and do this. I just wanted to throw out there, I don't know if you use any tool like this. You talked about using meditation. I do 15 minutes of timed free associative writing before I write. And I found that for some reason, if I go into a different program and I allow myself to talk to myself about what I'm about to work on, it has less pressure than actually the drafting itself in the document. And so I will actually take 15 minutes and I go and just like free write and kind of, sometimes I'll just say, what do I want in the scene? What do I want to make sure happens? What am I going for? What are my tone? And just kind of talk to myself about it. And I found that is a really good way for me to break through that fear of putting something on paper.
I love that tip. I'm definitely going to share that with my clients. That's genius. I'm going to try that myself too. I've done free writing before, but not in that way of talking to myself, almost like a journaling beforehand. I really like that. Yeah.
I have an ongoing notebook of notes about the project where I'm having these kind of, like you said, you know, your first impulse to work through something is to write about it. And this is where I go, especially when I'm stuck or when I'm like, actually it's when I get messed up when I finish a chapter really beautifully. And then I'm like, oh, here's, you know, the next part. Sometimes it's easier to pick up something in the middle that you've, you know, already been sort of working on and you're like kind of partially through it and you're picking up those threads. But when you finish something like a chapter or a part and then you move on to that next part, sometimes that's where I have the most like freeze up. And so, yeah, it's kind of a really adapted version of the morning pages from the artist's way. But I just make it about the work itself. So I don't write necessarily like about my insecurities or stresses or whatever, but I will, I have a place where I can talk to myself about the characters or, well, that doesn't make sense. He would never say that because blah, blah, blah. You know, like all that stuff that you have going on in your head. I give that its own little parallel notebook to work on. So, yeah, I don't know if that is something that you can adapt, but maybe someone else that you work with, that technique might, because it's kind of like the idea of what you said about meditating beforehand. It is sort of getting at that. So tell me, is there like for you a connection with spiritual purpose and your identity as a writer? Talk to me about that.
Yes, I would love to. I mean, I think for me, definitely feeling connected to my highest self, my authentic self, my deepest self comes through writing. So I've noticed if there is a time in my life, I'm a big believer, as you are, in writing every day. And there have been times in my life where that has not been the case. And I feel so much of a disconnect between myself, but also just with the outside world. And I feel like when I'm not writing, I'm a less compassionate, thoughtful, connected person than I am when I am writing and taking that time for my creative self and to access my, I think of it as accessing my inner self or even my inner child. You know, that person I was, like you mentioned, in when you decide to study creative writing or when you first start writing, I think it's easy to get away from that version of myself and to kind of lose touch of the power of writing. I think of it, to me, it's, there's a spiritual component because I just think it's so remarkable. I mean, we take it for granted just because we, it's how we communicate, but just the idea that, so for the English language, we have 26 characters in our alphabet, and that I'm able to take something inside of my brain, especially with fiction writing, if it's this imaginative scene that I'm seeing in my brain, and use these 26 characters to express that in a way that you can read it and have that in your brain. I mean, it's amazing when you think about it, and then thinking about all the books that have been written, all the things that have been written throughout time, using for the English language just those same 26 characters. I mean, it gives me goosebumps. It's remarkable to me, and it makes me feel connected to myself, to others across time, and then also just on a spiritual level, when I've gone through tough things, but especially with loss and grief. Writing about the experience, but also about the person that I've lost, helps me just feel this continuing connection with them, and almost like a continuing conversation that I still am having with them, even though I'm not able to call them on the phone and talk to them in that way.
Mm. You had a friend that passed away that you wrote about. Was that?
Yeah. Yeah. One of my best friends, Celine, she passed away very suddenly in a car accident, and she was only 26. And the first thing I did, I mean, all I wanted to do was read and cook and write. And that night I just wrote about her. I just remember it just felt like this need inside of me, like in the same way that if you're starving and you need to eat, like it was this need that I just had to write about her. And I wrote this letter to her, and I've continued writing about her. And it's really interesting. I've just noticed that when I write about her, it's usually then that night or maybe the next night where she'll visit me in a dream. Or I just feel like there's this connection with her that's ongoing, that I'm able to tap into through my writing.
I often attract clients in my practice who show up for a reading, presenting symptoms of depression or referring to themselves as depressed. And many of these people are writers who aren't writing. Like that's what comes out of the reading that I do for them. Writers who don't have a project or who don't practice writing on a daily basis, like what we talk about. And when we say having a writing practice, it can be something like journaling every day or doing the, you know, free associative writing. You don't have to be producing best-selling material all the time, right? Writers also who have put their dream away on a shelf in a dark closet somewhere, and their spirit is kind of dying because of that, you know, and they feel like they're depressed or they lost energy or they, you know, don't feel excitement for other parts of their world. And it's often that thing that they're, that's a hole, you know? So I would love for you to talk about, I mean, is that something that you see, by the way, in some of the people that you attract to work with?
Yes, I love how you've described that because, yes, a lot of the people that I work with come to me, I'm almost like a final desperate act where they have this book inside of them that they have wanted to write. Some for years and years and years, and it won't go away. It's like this, you know, this stubborn itch that just won't leave them. They have this impulse that they really have this story they want to share, but for years they've ignored it, or they've given excuses, or they haven't you know, they've said they don't have enough time. You know, one woman came to me and she said, I can't sleep. I can't eat. This book just won't, you know, it won't leave me alone. And so, yes. And it's been remarkable to me when I first started, you know, I just thought of myself as a writing coach. I was going to help people write their books. And I thought of my expertise in writing as being very valuable and helpful, which it is. But I found that, the clients I work with have these kind of breakthrough moments, or, they change in other ways, not just in the writing of their book as we work together. So, some of them have these huge epiphanies about their business and their mission and serving people through their business. Other people, this one client recently told me, you know, writing this book really saved my life this year. And so I think it's because, and I've also had people tell me, well, why do I need to work with you? Why can't I just hire a ghostwriter to write my book? Which some people, I mean, I'm not saying that that is not a decision that some people should make, but I'm just a big believer in taking the journey for yourself in writing your story, especially if it's something that is really connected to your heart and your mission. I think that you will learn so much about yourself, and it will be this this journey that you undertake that to me is unlike anything else in my life. Like, I don't know how you feel, Slade, but when I finish a writing project, especially, you know, a big project, just the high that I feel or the excitement I feel, it's unlike any other excitement or joy in my life. It's a different texture, a different richness. So being able to experience that for yourself, I think, just it changes people in other areas of their life, not just regarding their book.
I can see someone hiring a ghostwriter or someone to write a book for them if the product of the book is meant to be part of some other type of marketing, like maybe they're putting themselves out there to run for office, or they're doing some kind of speaking tour and, you know, motivational stuff. And so the book is like just this one kind of tool in some bigger scheme. But what you and I are talking about is a spiritual practice in a certain way. It's almost like when you said, you doing the work itself versus having someone else do it for you. It popped into my head the thought of like, oh, I want to do yoga. I'm going to hire someone to do yoga poses for me. Like, you know, because to me, writing is comparable to fitness or yoga or meditation or any of those kind of aspirational things that we do to reconnect with our higher selves. You know, it's like, it's a kind of religious thing. I mean, we're nerds for this stuff, right? So it is a spiritual practice for us. So just, you know, to those of you who want to hire a ghostwriter, that's another program. I think we are really speaking to that person, like you said, who has this book burning inside them that is just haunting them. So that brings me to you as a coach, because you're right. It's not just whether or not you're a good grammar girl or you have good writing, you know, rules and practice in place or whatever that you can share with people, but also recognizing that this can be a transformative part of their spiritual process, or their identity may change as a result of this. It can be therapy, right? Like it is a very therapeutic thing. So let's say we've got someone out there listening, and I just got the word that there are like hundreds. There are hundreds of people listening who have that book that they've always wanted to write, or they have a sense that their story is meant to be told. How do we get them to stop procrastinating and finally write that book that's burning inside them?
That is the million-dollar question. Yes, I feel like we've shared some wonderful tools to get people to start writing. I think the main thing I found is trying to quiet down those critical voices. So when I start working with someone new, before we even dive into what is this book going to be about and talking about the logistics of maybe making an outline and planning out things, the first thing we do is really to get into the foundation of that mental space and think about what are some of the root causes of these blocks that you're experiencing. So I find a lot of people struggle with perfectionism, and a lot of people have really negative experiences with writing that are often from years and years and years ago, often in when they were young, in even elementary school or middle school, where they don't think of themselves as a writer, or they don't think that they're a good writer because they still remember getting papers back with, you know, covered in red pen. And there are these wounds in there, and these, you know, deep experiences that perhaps they're not aware of consciously, but that are buried in there, that are keeping them from feeling like what they have to say even today is a value, and that it can help other people. Or so my first thing would be to do some journaling, like you're talking about, or just some thinking about where do you think those perfectionism thoughts, or where is the root of that coming from? Can you think back to some experiences that you've had in your past with writing or creativity in general that are maybe affecting you even still today? And so I found that once we can acknowledge those experiences, there are a lot of different activities we can do to try to get past those. Like sometimes I have clients, we have a conversation with their former selves, or we write a letter, or just do some ritual type things to try to kind of let that go and move on. And then something else that helps me that might be helpful to some listeners when I'm writing and I have those negative voices or those perfectionism voices come into my head, because I think it's not, for me at least, it's not something that I can clear out once and it never comes back. I think it's sometimes just part of the creative process when you're doing something that feels new and scary and risky. But something I tell myself when the voices come up, so let's say I have a voice that is saying, oh, you know, this chapter is going nowhere, like this is just not working, you're not a good writer, you should just give up. What I say back to myself is, oh, it's okay. And that's okay. So instead of trying to like argue back with those voices, I found for myself that if I just say, and that's okay, it gives me permission to continue writing, even if it's not perfect, even if I have some voice in my head saying that it's not perfect. Just using those three words, and that's okay, gives me permission to be imperfect. And I think that's something we should all give ourselves permission to be.
I like to tell myself, write a really horrible version of this chapter. Like that's one of the tricks that I'll play on myself is I'm like, oh my God, this is the worst chapter ever. Okay, well, write that really bad chapter then. Like, don't even try to write a good one. Just write that really bad one. If you keep trying to write bad chapters, you'll accidentally write good ones. That's the secret. Your goal should be to write a really crappy first draft of this book. I have a meme that I've kept on my phone for months now, and I don't even know if I've shared it, but it's something someone posted on Instagram or whatever, a writer who was going into the new year, and her new year's intention was to get 100 rejection letters.
Because, I love it.
You know, like the idea that, you know, you have to like sort of mow through this stack of rejection letters in order to get to that point where someone says yes. And she was writing and she said, you know, I'm like halfway through the year and I've managed to get like 36 acceptances, and I actually accidentally had more yeses than nos, and I'm really failing at getting 100 rejections. But that whole concept of allowing yourself to do it badly, because a bad first draft can be edited. You know, it's like, I can do all kinds of things with any first draft. Give it to me as long as it's full of words, you know? Yeah. So to give yourself permission to say it's okay if it's bad. A bad book is still better than one you didn't write.
Exactly. And I love what you mentioned earlier about how sometimes your writing time, you know, you'll just be sitting in the chair reading through your manuscript or looking out the window. I think sometimes, and maybe it's because of the way that writers are often portrayed in the media, movies and television, we think that if we're writing, we have to, like you said, be filled with this inspiration, having these bursts of genius, our fingers are flying on the keyboard or we're just scribbling.
There's a glass of scotch beside us while this is happening. Cigarette burning in the ashtray.
And sometimes for myself, I'll have a day where it feels very unproductive, like I'm staring out the window for most of my writing time. But then usually the next day after that, or maybe a couple days, I'm getting a lot of words down. And I think that it's all connected, where trying to judge ourselves less and judge our writing process less, I think, is helpful, because for me, a lot of it, there's a magic at play that I don't quite understand. And so I don't want to be judging it. I want to sort of just trust in it and let it happen.
A few things come up for me. One is I think of my writing times as a date, an appointment, like a scheduled ongoing appointment with my writer self. You know what I mean? Like, it's like going to therapy every day, or going to, you know, have a medical treatment, or I don't, you know, you're going to a job. Like, it's something that's scheduled. And I mean, we go to work all the time in jobs that we hate and that we're not inspired to do. We don't feel like we're getting anything done, but we show up and we're there. So there's no reason why our creativity should be any different. The other thing that I wanted to say, one of the reasons why I do that parallel journal about the work is because if I'm having one of those days where I'm not being quote unquote productive, I'm not putting 1500 words on this manuscript, well, you know what? I'll go write 1500 words about why I'm struggling. You know, what is it that where am I hung up about this? What's the problem? Sometimes I need to talk to myself about it in order to realize, oh, you know what? The reason why I'm stuck around this is because my subconscious is trying to show me that there's actually a problem. Like I'm creating a plot hole and I'm not aware of it. And that's why I'm not moving forward. And sometimes those things will come out of a little bit of a free associative writing session. The other thing I want to say about doing it all the time is if you have one day a week that you set aside to do your writing, if something goes down, you have a cold and your kid needs to be picked up and, you know, like you had a crappy day and a flat tire and all these things go wrong and it, you know, busts your writing session for that day, you've lost a whole week. Mm-hmm. That's a huge blow to your schedule. Whereas if you're going every afternoon for an hour somewhere, or you're finding 30 minutes every morning, you know, to get up early and do it, then it's so much more forgiving if you blow it on Tuesday because you still have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday to try again. And it just, it's a quantities game at that point. The bad days don't hit you as hard because they still end up being in the minority when all is said and done. If you'll have as many of them as possible, it's actually hard to mess up a lot of them.
Yeah. And something else I love about writing every day is, to me, it takes the decision to write out of the equation. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that, you know, if you have your job, you don't wake up every morning and think, am I going to work today? Like, you just go. And it's the same with writing. I think for me, it makes it actually so much easier. For me, it's easier to write every single day than it would be to write one day a week or like 3 days a week, because then it might be more, well, I don't feel like doing it for this reason, X, Y, and Z. Whereas when it's every single day, it's just part of my routine. Like, I make my tea in the morning and brush my teeth, and it's like, okay, now it's my writing time. So actually, I tell a lot of my clients when they're starting the program with me is that I really want you to try to write every single day. I promise you it'll be easier that way than if you try to write 3 days a week.
I used to take Sunday off, and then I saw through keeping word count diaries, which, you know, that's a whole other story. I've actually given up on those for a while. I'm trying to be like not so like strict and school teachery with myself about it. But it is good to keep journals of your progress because you start to notice patterns in your behavior. And so, for instance, I noticed Monday's word counts always sucked. And I found that if I just go ahead and write on Sunday, I don't lose the momentum in the same way. And it tends to be more consistently just ongoing. It works. You know what I mean? Like every time I back away from it, it's going to take that much more of an effort to go into it again. And I think there are certain subconscious muscle memory things that start to happen when you have that habitual thing in place. Your subconscious starts to really assist you with queuing up certain type of states of mind, or starting to think about your project while you're brushing your teeth and making your tea. Things start to happen that you're not having to consciously struggle to, you know, move a mountain every single time. It starts to be something that some of it you can put on autopilot a little bit, and it's still there for you. I'm a big stickler. Even on a nice Sunday that's a day off, you know what's going to happen? Around that time in the afternoon, I'm going to start thinking about my book. And it's just easier for me to just say, okay, fine, I'm going to work on it for an hour and just, you know, and not really take a day off, because I was actually scripting an episode, which everyone will have already heard by the time they hear this one, but it's about the idea of recognizing what the reality is of doing this kind of work. you know, like being the writer that you wanted to be when you grew up kind of thing, and like how that doesn't really look like what you thought it would be, but it also is very real. And I can feel enormous gratitude about the fact that I can even worry and bitch and moan and complain about it as much as I do, because writers have this this wounded kind of neurosis about their work, you know, and especially when we talk to one another, we start to sound incredibly insane. Like we're all Woody Allen suddenly, you know, or Woody Allen characters anyway. But, you know, really recognizing that, and this is something that I got from one of my mentors. His name is Tim Grawl. And a little piece of wisdom that he gave to me was, don't focus so much on the individual project that you're working on. Focus on the lifestyle of being a writer. Like focus on inhabiting that as a identity, because people who inhabit that as an identity have certain behaviors and practices built into their life. And the results of doing those things that writers do is that you produce books, you know? So I've been trying to, as I said, get into that place of identifying with it and treating it as a joyful part of my existence, and less of this chore, this book report that you were assigned when you were, you know, 8 years old, that became the, you know, Achilles heel for the rest of your reading and writing life or whatever it is. But we have had so many messages about self-worth in the way that we express ourselves and put ourselves out into the world. And I just want to say to everyone, the most authentic voice is probably the one that you use when you speak. And sometimes if you're struggling with trying to sound like a writer, the best thing that you can do is write an email to your best friend and tell them the story. Like that's another trick that helps me get somewhere real with it.
Exactly. I love that. I love using that trick as well, because I think sometimes we get away from our own authentic voices because we think that we need to be someone else or to have this different persona.
It's supposed to sound different somehow, right? It's like, oh, well, this doesn't sound grand and intellectual enough. But, and you know, and there are other people who are really great storytellers who freak out when they sit down in front of a page, but they're very funny when they tell stories to their friends, you know, over drinks or whatever. And so I think that if you're one of those people, speak it, you know, like record it. And, you know, first, as a first telling, like get out your iPhone, and they all have recording devices built into them now, and tell the story. Just tell it like you would tell it to someone over dinner. And sometimes that is a great first draft.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I work with a lot of people with is working with themselves, not against themselves. So I think some people have this idea in their head that, oh, in order to be a writer, I have to, you know, sit and actually write this out. But like you're saying, if you're someone who that is challenging for you and it's much more natural for you to speak it out, then speak it, you know, work, make it as easy for yourself as possible. And I love what you said about the writing process, that we can find joy in it instead of it being this drudgery chore. And something that has been helpful for me and for people I work with is to try to create aspects of your writing routine that you do look forward to or find pleasurable. So I love, Slade, how you go to the tea shop, the apothecary. For me, I have this special tea that I love that I only drink when I'm writing. I have this music playlist that I only listen to when I'm writing. Maybe there's a certain, you know, sense that you love that you want to associate with writing. So I think trying to make the routine itself pleasurable can really help with having those associations in your brain.
Oh, yes. And you know what? I just thought of something else that I do that might be fun for other people. I create Spotify playlists for my projects. And so, for instance, sometimes it's very easy to do. Like, I'm working on a project right now that takes place in 1980. So I've made a playlist of music from the late 70s, you know, and the year 1980 that I remember from childhood that I love. And I often listen to it in the car on the way to the tea shop. Kind of like get in the mood, but I don't listen to it any other time. It's like, that's my part of my gateway process to, it's like a portal magic to go into that world, is to create a music playlist for it. For one of my pieces of historical fiction, a book I wrote called Havenwood, I actually had a movie soundtrack that I listened to every single day before I would write. And the reason I picked a soundtrack was because it had a certain emotional tone to it. And I wanted that to just sort of, through osmosis, to kind of be bled into that manuscript, for it to have that tone or that feeling. Now, I don't know if it does, but it helped me to feel like I'm getting myself in the mood for this. Mm-hmm. And as far as the joy, it was like more fun making the playlist than it is like working on the manuscript sometimes, you know, or sometimes adding things to the playlist can count on a day when you show up and it's just not working, but you think, I'm still going to do something that is related to this project. Mm-hmm. Just to, and I've learned to give myself a lot of latitude. Sometimes research is a great way when you're really beating your head against the wall. You know what? Pivot and use that time and say, all right, fine, I'm going to research this thing about cars in the 1920s that I know is, it keeps coming up in my manuscript. I don't know enough about cars, and you know, I need to put some details in there. So today I'm going to make this a research day, and I'm going to pull in one of those little side projects. Research can be a scary, slippery slope if it is used as a procrastination device. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to research this topic and just keep reading books about it and never get around to writing. So I got a piece of advice from someone who writes historical fiction and nonfiction. And he told me, he said, write the scene, write the chapter, whatever it is, as just as you would imagine it. And then go and find those details to support the way that you imagined it. And what you'll often find is all you really needed was maybe the name of the car, or the fact that, oh, well, all those cars were convertibles. Okay, so that's a little fact. But you don't need to know like 1,200 words worth of backstory from Wikipedia before you write the scene, you know? And so to keep yourself going and just keep yourself moving, just make a note to yourself, like, this needs a, you know, this needs a little piece of research, and research it after the fact.
Yeah.
Or do it on one of those days when you feel like you can't write a word to save your life. You know, that's when you whip those out, and it still all counts because it's all part of, you know, the project and the joy of this undertaking. So you have a program for doing all the stuff that we're talking about, and you and I could literally talk for hours just about sharing all these like nerdy tips about, you know, how we write. And hopefully there are people who are getting a bunch of good ideas from hearing that. But you have something called the 90-Day Book Breakthrough Program. Tell us about that.
Yes, and it encompasses so much of what we've been talking about. So how to get started, how to get past that muddy middle zone where you feel like giving up, how to actually get your words down on paper and beat those perfectionism monsters and stop procrastinating. And it's an intense, short program. So I picked 90 days because I found from working with clients over the years that a lot of them, when it was a longer period of time, life would get in the way, like we've talked about. Things would happen that would kind of help make them lose their momentum, and the project would peter out, and it would be much harder to get started again. So my program is set up as 90 days or about 3 months where you really commit to, I'm going to get a first draft done of my book. Mm-hmm. And so I am there with you to be holding your hand and cheering you on and alongside you as you complete this marathon. And so my program, the main component of it is the one-on-one coaching that I do with my clients. I also have, there's an online lesson component to it as well, with different things like you and I have been talking about, different things about the writing process and drafting and outlining and revising and publishing and all of this information. And what I've heard from clients is that simply making the commitment to sign up for the program is a huge first step for them, because that is them saying that they're actually committing to finally writing this book. And then having me as almost like this teacher that they don't want to disappoint can be mm-hmm. enough motivation to get their pages done every week to send to me. And so I'm there with you to help you start, write, and finish your book in 90 days.
That's awesome. I actually think that 90 days is a really good amount for me personally for a first draft in a project. Yeah. Like that's a very comfortable amount of time. You have a free class though. If somebody wants to kind of dip their toe in, maybe tell us about the free class that they can take.
Yes, I forgot to mention that. So I do have a free online masterclass. You can find it. You can register by going to bookbreakthroughmasterclass.com. And that'll just give you a better sense of me and my teaching style and I share some of my top tips for to stop procrastinating and to actually get started. So I would love for you to check that out if you're interested.
Awesome. Dallas, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. Tell us where we can go to find you online.
Oh, this was just wonderful. You can find me online. I'm on Instagram at Dallas Woodburn Author and Facebook at Writer Dallas. And my website is dallaswoodburnauthor.com.
That was great, Dallas. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever app you prefer. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message, an answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. That mountain is not going to get any smaller the longer you stand here and stare at it. Identify the first three steps and execute the first one. You'll know what to do next, and I'll talk to you later.